Welcome to Teaming Up Conversations, the podcast. I'm your host, Simon Vetter. I believe that one of the most satisfying and rewarding moments in life is belonging to a trusted team and achieving something unique together. Thank you for joining our dialogue, how to build, lead, and be part of an inspired team and community. In this episode, we examine the core about what it means to be human. I am honored to speak with Maya Hu Chen, an expert on cross-cultural leadership, diversity, and inclusion. She's the author of Global Leadership, which was chosen by Harvard Business School as their working knowledge book. Her most recent book, Saving Face: How to Preserve Dignity and Build Trust, explores the nuances of working with people across cultures through the universal concepts of saving, losing, and honoring face. Born and raised in Taiwan, Maya is fluent in Chinese and English. Early in her career, she was an anchor for the China Broadcasting Company in Taiwan. She moved to the US to earn her master's from the University of Pennsylvania. Now she resides in San Diego, California, with her husband and three triplets. Maya embodies respect, generosity, and wisdom, and I'm very fortunate to call her a trusted personal colleague and wonderful friend. Please enjoy this teaming up conversation with Maya Hu Chen on self-esteem, dignity, and trust. Maya, I am so happy to have you on my podcast.
Hello, Simon, my friend.
How are
so
you
good
today?
To see you. I am doing well. Thank you.
Excellent. Recently, you wrote and published the book, Saving Face: How to Preserve Dignity and Build Trust. Let's start there. Can you describe the concept of saving face? Where does it come from? What does it mean?
Be happy to. My background is that I was born and raised in Taiwan. I was born and raised in Asian culture, and I came to the U.S. to go to graduate school. More than half of my life lives in the U.S., and I work in a global space. I have worked and educated and coached thousands of leaders in all different industries. Over the years, I have learned that the concept of face, even though it was originated in Asia, but it's really a universal concept. It goes way beyond its origins of Asia. The concept of face really permeates all levels of social and business interactions. It speaks to the common human desire to be accepted and respected. When you hear the term, it's not about the money. The issue is often about face. What is face, right? Maybe we should define that first. Now, face, F-A-C-E, represents one's self-esteem, self-worth, identity, reputation, pride, and dignity.
It's the very core of being human.
Exactly. You said it perfectly. And it's about inside and out, how you see yourself, how you feel about yourself, and then how you view yourself, and also how other people see you. It's inside out. It's the whole person. And that is the core of you as a human being.
One of my favorite quotes is by William James. He says, "The deepest need in human nature is the craving to be appreciated," which is all about, we all want to save face. We all want to feel appreciated, valued, respected. Let's take the other side. What happens when people lose face?
Obviously, that's not something we wanted to do, but sometimes we can cause people to lose face. We don't even know it. It could be unintentional. So there are actually three key concepts about face. One is about honoring face. That's really about being able to show appreciation and show respect and admiration and grant dignity to others. And so I call that honoring face. That's the first step. The second step, it's about saving face. Now, saving face is authentic and intentional act of turning around a potentially risky situation to preserve dignity for everybody involved and then to produce a positive outcome. So saving face, it's a real skill set. It's a soft skill that's hard to do. Honoring face and saving face are so essential in building trust and preserve dignity for others. And the opposite of saving face is losing face, like you said, right? So losing face is something that we wanted to avoid. Losing face describes the conditions where people feel devalued, disrespected, humiliated, and unappreciated. Now, when I grew up in Taiwan, I often hear this saying from my mom, from my parents, from my teachers. They would say, spilled water is hard to regain. 覆水难收, that's Chinese. What does that mean? Spilled water is hard to regain. Well, you imagine there's a glass of water on the table and you accidentally knock it over and then spill water everywhere on the floor. Boy, what a mess, right? How hard is it to put it all back in the glass? And even if you manage to put a little bit back in the glass, you still want to drink it? I don't think so. Yeah.
How do we avoid spilling the water?
Most of the time, we don't intend to spill the water. We do it unintentionally. We are on autopilot. We're not paying attention. We don't think before we speak. When we spill water, it's like we say or do something we didn't really mean to do or say, and then it has a negative impact on somebody, but we can't take it back. So then how can you prevent that from happening is you got to get off that autopilot. Very often I think about when we're driving to work or going home, we don't even think. I don't even know how I get home because we're on autopilot. We just automatic do things. But you know, if you're driving in a foreign country, people are driving on the opposite side of the road and then the driver's side, the seat is the opposite side of the car, you better pay attention. Otherwise, you're going to have a bad, big accident. Same thing that when we're working with people, always make sure that we're not on autopilot, especially if you're a leader, to always be mindful about your impact, the impact of your actions, your behaviors, things you say or don't say, they can have an impact on other people. You have a ripple impact.
Mm-hmm. You have an example how you personally experience.
Yeah, I do. Let me tell you a true story. I'm not going to use the real name, but this is a true story from my client. So let's just call him Jeff. So Jeff was a finance director. He works for a big finance company and he was facing a big crisis. What happened was that under his watch, a frontline employee has stolen $100,000 in an 8-month period of time. And as the finance director, Jeff, he designed and deployed this entire cash flow process that allowed this employee to commit this fraud undetected. It was a high-profile case, and it was discussed not only in the security meetings, but also spread quickly throughout the whole company. Everybody was talking about it. Now, Jeff felt entirely responsible and also personally victimized by this. It was an example of losing face big time. So very soon, the company's COO planned to have a meeting with Jeff and his team to discuss this matter. And then you can tell the stress consumed Jeff. He lost weight. He couldn't sleep for days. And then he even developed this terrible rash on his face. For days, Jeff felt like a dead man walking. And then so when the day finally arrived, the team waited nervously in this conference room for the COO to arrive. And then the COO walked in. And then he broke the tension with just one sentence. He said, "I don't care about the theft." He said, "The theft is unavoidable, whether you run a hot dog stand or a multinational company. And the company was insured and we will be made whole." And the COO said, "I only want to know that you plan to review the process and fix it. And you seem well on your way from what I can see." Jeff's demeanor immediately brightened. For the rest of the meeting, Jeff and his team focused on problem solving and he returned to the job with renewed energy. The COO had saved his face. So let's think about this. How did the COO do it? What did he do, right? Number one, he created psychological safety while holding Jeff accountable. He didn't let him off the hook. He was kind and firm. He chose his words carefully. He showed humility and emotional intelligence when you deal with this very delicate situation. He helped Jeff overcome shame and embarrassment. quickly and refocus his energy in solving the problem and moving forward. So he sent a very clear message to Jeff and his team. I trust you. I have confidence that you are doing the right thing. That is saving face.
In your book, you write about microaggressions. What is it? And can you give some examples?
Yes. Microaggression is a term that we are hearing more and more now, and people are becoming more aware of it. And this is happening everywhere, even though this behavior has been existing for decades. But I think people start to really pay attention to microaggression. What is microaggression? All right, let's first define it. So microaggressions are small, subtle acts that belittle, overlook, single out, or discount individuals. Very often based on unconscious bias against characteristics like race and gender. So for example, give some subtle insults or ignore somebody's comments. Somebody at the meeting made a comment about something. You completely ignore that. You interrupt people when they're still speaking. You tell insensitive jokes. You're making fun or even mispronounce somebody's name. You make comment about a Black coworker's hairstyle or comment on an Asian colleague's accent. Or you assume that the Latinx workers can easily translate a document into Spanish. There's countless examples. I remember when I was the first year graduate student at University of Pennsylvania, I was walking on the street and a total stranger came up to me and say, "Hey, what are you?" Okay, so I was first taken aback. I had no idea who this person was and what was he talking to me? And then I realized that he was talking to me. And then I thought about the question, what are you? Instead of who are you? What are you? It's as if I'm not a human being. So I walked away. I didn't say anything. I walked away, but that was decades ago. But I still feel like it was yesterday. And that was microaggression. It's actually not so subtle. That was pretty direct, right? Microaggression is real. It happens every day in our workplace, in our daily lives.
Microaggression starts with, you mentioned unbiased or with bias. People have biases or not.
Well, sometimes unconscious bias.
Unconscious bias.
Conscious, yeah.
It happens to many people. How do we uncover or how do we become more aware and conscious of those biases? What strategies do you recommend?
Excellent question, Simon. I think that it's like when we work on leadership development, when we provide coaching or feedback to our clients, and we often have to point out, based on the 360 feedback, that often we have to point out their blind spots, right? And so the first step is that awareness. And that is so important. I think for most people, people are not usually intentionally wanted to create or harm other people or insult other people. Usually it's just simply unaware that that is something that could be offensive to people. So the first step is really about raise that awareness. And how do we uncover those unconscious bias? I think it's something that we can all do is say, first thing is learn, ask questions. And to ask other people to teach us what are some of the things that could be offensive, or ask people if you say something that could be interpreted or misinterpreted as an insult, learn as much as you can and then apologize for your action. Because then a lot of times if we are unintentionally hurting people or actually causing somebody to lose face, if it's not something that you do it intentionally, once you realize that's the impact, even you may have the positive intention. If you have a negative impact, then apologize sincerely, authentically. And you know what? 99% of the time, people will accept that apology. And then once you realize that that's your blind spot, then guess what? Next time, just avoid saying or doing things like that and be aware of that. And simply ask more questions and understand and educate yourself. I think the first step really is about self-awareness. So I actually have a AAA model that talk about the first step is awareness. It's about self-aware. And the second step is acquire. What is acquire? Acquire is acquire knowledge, understanding of other people's experience and their perspectives. And then the third step is adapt, right? Adapt your behaviors, your mindset, so that you will be able to pivot your actions to build bridges and then for mutual understanding. So triple A, aware, acquire, and adapt.
Very good. You talked about intention, intent, and also how it comes across, the impact. Can you elaborate on that and maybe have a personal experience how you distinguish those two terms?
The impact and intent are two different things. Now, when you think about the intent, is that for the most part, that we, as we go through life, that most of us people, I assume that, you know, especially in a professional environment, that we have the best intent. We want to do good work and we want to demonstrate respect and we want to get along with people. So we have the best intent, but sometimes that we may not realize that the impact can be negative, regardless of your intent. Okay. So let me tell you a story that it's something that I personally had caused somebody to lose face. Even though I had a good intent, but then the impact was very negative. I was teaching a global leadership program at a global telecommunication company. And this is a program that I had 20 global executives that flew in from all over the world, coming in for a two-day program. I started the day by doing introduction, and then I typically are very interactive in the session. I asked a question to the group, and a Korean executive raised his hand. And he said, I have something to share. So I say, okay, Mr. Kim, yes, please. And then so he started talking about what his perspective was. And he was not a native English speaker. So he's very thoughtful. He spoke slowly and very thoughtfully. And then so after a few minutes, he paused. Then I thought, oh, okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. I thank him. And then I move on to the next topic. During the first break in the morning, the HR person came up to me very nervously and then said, Maya, I have something very urgent. I need to talk to you. You know, Mr. Kim, he's very angry at you and he's going to leave the class and not coming back. He's extremely upset. I was like, Mr. Kim, what happened? And then she said, well, you know, remember that you asked a question and then he answered. And he said, you cut him off. He didn't finish. He didn't finish what he was saying. And you cut him off. And he lost face. He was very upset. He thought you were rude. You disrespect him. I was like, oh my gosh, that was certainly not my intention. And I had no clue that I did that. I guess I've been in America too long. And so I insulted him. I didn't even know it.
I had a similar experience. I worked with a Korean company.
Yes.
With the same organization in the US, and I did a workshop for 15 managers, and one of them was Korean. And I did an interactive exercise. I got him up, and in my way, I felt, and everybody, all the Americans felt like it's an exercise to help him. In the break, he left, and he felt humiliated by him being in front of the whole group. And again, it's about my intention was good. The way it came across in their cultural context,
yeah,
exactly the opposite.
Yes, yes. Do you know? Do you want to know how it ends with my executive?
I want to know.
So as soon as the HR person told me about it, right? I look inside the classroom. Sure enough, Mr. Kim was packing up and he was ready to take off. So I walk over there to him. I said, Mr. Kim, may I speak to you for a minute, please? In the hallway. So he looked at me, he was very stern. His face was all red. It was very upset. So he said, okay. So then he walked outside with me. And then I told him, I heard that you were upset. Would you please tell me what happened? And then he said, you cut me off. You were teaching global leadership classes, but then you were disrespectful to me. I didn't finish. And that was very rude. And then I immediately said, I apologize. I'm very sorry that I did that. I did not mean to cut you off. I thought you already completed your statement. Would you please forgive me? I'm so sorry. Would you give me another chance? And I promise I will not do that again. So he took a deep breath. He was, face was all red, right? And his voice was high. And then after I apologized, he looked much more relaxed. And then I just paused and wait for him. And he looked at me. He said, "Okay, I'll stay." So he went back to the classroom. And then after the break, we started again. And I learned my lesson. So I have every opportunity I had. He wanted to come in. I waited until he finished. And then even I didn't know if he was done or not. I asked him, "All right, so thank you. Do you have any additional comments?" He said, "No, I'm done." Then I move on. But that was a typical example of the intent versus impact, right? Sometimes we just don't know that we have such a negative impact. And then it's important that we acknowledge that, have that awareness, and quickly pivot our behaviors to style shift and apologize, be humble, admit your mistakes, and then change your behaviors.
You talk a lot about psychological safety. What's the difference between psychological safe environment and a trusting environment?
That's a really good question. Psychological safety is a very important condition for people to feel comfortable and to build trust. I see that trust is actually the outcome of psychological safety. Without feeling psychologically safe, you can't trust people. And when you don't trust, you can't fully express yourself and then do your best work.
How can we, in a team environment, create more psychological safety where people feel safe to speak up, to ask a question, to voice their perspective, to raise their hand? How can we do that?
Let me give you some practical tips. Psychological safety is a very abstract concept, but there are some concrete steps that you can take to create that safety. And also, it's not only the leader's responsibility. It's everybody needs to do this, co-create the psychological safety, but the leader needs to set the way, need to set example, to lead by example. Some good behaviors that people can demonstrate in a workplace to build the psychological safety is that, number one, that we allow people to complete their thoughts. You truly listen, because listening is a best way to show that you care and you respect them. And then you're telling the other person you matter. What you say matters. So I respect what you have to say and I'm interested. So number one is that you allow people to complete their thoughts and do not cut people off. And secondly is that to be able to invite everyone to have their voice in the room. Right? If you have people who are more introverted, or people who speak English as second or third language, perhaps they're uncomfortable, or in the last 2 years, we all work remotely, that sometimes people are uncomfortable on Zoom or on the phone, quiet members, invite them in, ask them for their opinion, for their input, and acknowledge their input. Give people equal space, equal time, and equal weight for their voice. Those are very simple acts to really create a space for everybody to feel like they're being heard. Gallup actually had a research to show that what percentage of U.S. workers actually feel like they're being heard. Their opinion actually matters. 30%. 3 out of 10 U.S. employees feel like their opinion matters at work. What happened to the 70%? Yeah.
Let me summarize. I think there are three very simple but very powerful approaches. Number one, let people finish their sentence and thoughts. Avoid interrupting. Number two, invite everybody to contribute and voice their perspective. So that means sometimes we need to ask.
Yes.
And be patient for people who are more introvert to allow them to speak up. And number three, acknowledge what they say.
Yeah.
And here what I see often, understand what they're saying, which doesn't mean we always agree.
That's right.
Sometimes people make a comment, and sometimes people think understanding means agreeing, which is totally different.
That's absolutely right. Simon, when we allow people to speak, that's actually one of the key behavior for psychological safety. There are two key behaviors based on Google study, Aristotle. They study 180 teams around the world. to try to find out what is the key factor that make the team great. Psychological safety is number one differentiator, and there are two key behaviors. Number one is that there is conversational turn-taking. Everybody speak about the same amount of time. Nobody dominates and nobody feel left out. At the end of the meeting, everybody say what they want to say. They don't hold back. That's number one. Number two behavior is high social sensitivity. That means that empathy, that you tune into the reactions of your team members. You watch their verbal, nonverbal cues, body language, reactions, and you demonstrate empathy. That's how that you create an environment of psychological safety, is to have those type of behaviors.
Very good. Thank you. You talk about in your book, preserve dignity. And dignity has a lot to do with self-esteem. How do we help build other people's self-esteem and confidence? Do you have any tips on that?
Dignity, it's a big word. When I wrote the book, and I use it as my subtitle of the book, I look it up, the dictionary, to what is dignity, right? And the definition of dignity is someone that's worthy of respect. And who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want to be respected? And so when you treat people, you preserve their dignity, is essentially you make them feel like they're worthy. When we think about preserve dignity and then help build others' self-esteem, what are some of the things we can do to do that? I go back to honoring face, right? The first concept of face is honoring face. Honoring face is not a rocket science. You and I and our audience probably already live doing this every day. But we don't even realize that we're doing this as honoring face. You know, it's something as simple as you acknowledge somebody's contribution, you say thank you to them, and you give them credit for what they've done, and you listen to them. You show gratitude for who they are and what they did. There are so many things that we can do in our daily interaction to really honor face for other people. And we're sending a message to other person that you're worthy of my respect. When we do this to others, we build up their confidence, we lift them up, and we make them feel worthy. And that's something that everybody can do, both whether you're a leader or not.
Very important concept that we can apply in business, in family, with friends, to make everybody feel worthy, because we all crave for that.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Let's shift to attitudes and learning from challenging situations. We have known each other for many years, and you have triplets. You have three children.
Yes.
And it's been challenging. What have you learned from that personal experience being a mom of three?
Yeah, Simon, you've known me since, wow, how many years? Quite a long time.
2001.
Really? Oh my goodness. Yes. Okay. Being a mother, it's life-changing experience. And I know that I'm sure parents around the world can appreciate that. In my situation, it was somewhat unique because number one, I have three children, but they all were born at the same time. So the triplets, it's not a small task. I was not totally prepared, but here we come, right? And in addition to having the triplets, when the kids turned two of them were diagnosed with autism. They have some significant challenges, developmental disability that we have to deal with. And there's no cure for autism. It's a lifelong disability. So I think over the years, I actually very often that I see myself as very blessed to have this kind of lesson that my children are teaching me, and to be able to be more patient, also to be much more empathetic about life's curveballs and things that could happen to people. And also never take things for granted and always be grateful for what we have.
How did it teach you patience?
Every day they teach me to be patient. For example, my daughter, she likes to get into things, right? So she would repeatedly go to my room and take my stuff. And then so recently she went into my room and went to my closet and cut up all of my coats, my winter coat. I have a closet with winter coat. I have some coats. They're wool, they're leather, they're different materials. She just decided that she took a pair of scissors and cut them all up. I can either get extremely upset, which I did at the beginning. I was like, what? Right? But then I also realized that that's part of the disability. It is what it is. So I learned to take things from a different perspective and to say things come and go. That's really minor. I have to look at things from a different perspective and then think about, instead of getting all upset, that doesn't serve anybody any good, that what can we do to prevent that from happening again? So I put a lock in my closet. And it's about focusing on problem solving. And I'm not a saint. When things happen like this, it can really test my patience. Over time, I have learned to really focus on solutions. And also, empathy is a big part of it, is to put myself in her position and say, why does she do that? Does she have other needs that is not met? Or that's part of the disability, that the impulse that make her do that, that she didn't really realize that was actually causing very big damage.
It teaches also to be forgiving.
Yes. Otherwise, you know what? There's no point for me to hold grudges, right? And I think this applies to so many things in life, not just with my children. I think that this also teach me to kind of look back and treat things with different perspectives.
A couple of years ago, you had a breakthrough with your daughter to learn to communicate with her and find out how she really thinks. Can you describe what happened?
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was really transformative. My kids, both my daughter and son, the two autistic ones, don't communicate verbally. They're nonverbal. So for 24 years, I had no idea what they really feel and what they think, because they couldn't communicate with me verbally or in writing. I actually, in a random chance, that discover and learn about this therapy, identify, find a wonderful communication coach that was able to coach me on how to communicate with my kids. And my daughter was particularly interested in this way of communicating. So we used an app on the iPad, and using the special app for her to type on the Bluetooth keyboard to communicate with me about what she feels and thinks. So it's communication through typing. So for the very first time in 23 years, that was last year, in 23 years, that I knew what her favorite color was and how she felt about things. And that was extremely emotional experience, but also it's something that is so precious that it's almost like I finally see there is a window going into her soul that I can start to understand my daughter. All these years, she told me her favorite color is blue, right? But all these years, I've been buying her pink and purple. No more, right?
The point.
So, yes, yes. Things like this. But, you know, it's not easy. We're still struggling with communication because a lot of conditions has to be met in order for her to communicate clearly. But every step in the way that we're moving towards that direction, that I learn more about her. But then it's like three step forward, two step back. That's why another thing is that's also taught me to be patient, because you just cannot rush things. You have to wait and be patient. One thing I also learned from this process is always presume competence, because people always assume that they're not smart and they don't understand anything because they can't communicate. But they actually know so much, just they cannot express themselves. So presume competence is such an important concept. So instead of talking to them like they're a five-year-old, I talk to her and him, you know, my kids, like they're 24 years old. And that makes a big difference, because you treat them like adult and presume that they understand and they have the competence to act appropriately. There's so many life lessons I have learned to be not only the mother of triplets, but also to learn from this autism to how to deal with this challenge. You know, it's a gift.
One thing I appreciate about you is you always have this optimistic, positive outlook, and whatever challenge arrives, you learn to deal with it. You don't get upset. You try to understand. You're empathetic. So very powerful lesson. So thank you for your story.
You're very welcome, Simon. One thing I was just thinking as we were talking is I study Buddhism. And one of the key concepts in Buddhism is about impermanence. And I think that helps me a lot going through life and experience all those challenges. Impermanence is that you look at things that when you have setbacks or things are not going well, that's not going to last forever. Okay. It's all temporary and this shall pass. Okay. So whether it's good things or bad things, it will pass. It's not permanent. And also in the big scheme of things, our setback and or our success or good things or bad things happen, it's very, very trivial compared to the big scheme of things. So I think that to understand this impermanence and also to appreciate what we do have and to have the gratitude about what we do have and enjoy the current moment. You can't control the past. It's gone. And you can't control the future. So if I can focus on the current moment and then just take a deep breath and say, this shall pass. I'm going to enjoy what I have right now. Life is good.
Very, very important, powerful concept. Thank you. We have a common friend and mentor, Marshall Goldsmith. You know him for many years. I learned a lot from him. How did you meet him and what have you learned from him?
Marshall was my boss back in 1988. I work with Marshall, and that was how I entered the leadership development field, was that I worked for him full-time for a number of years. That was really a life-changing experience. I learned so much. He was my mentor, my teacher in so many ways. So I'm deeply grateful for that. I have learned a lot from him about professionalism and about leadership development and, of course, about coaching. Right. And I remember there are many life lessons that he had taught me. But then when I think back, that there are a couple of different incidents that kind of always I still remember vividly, and then they still have a positive impact in me even today. Okay. One of the lessons was that when I was thinking about continuing and then actually make leadership development and executive coaching as my career. At the time, that was in the early 90s, I look around of all the successful leadership consultants and trainers in the field, and they're all middle-aged white men. So I saw very few women, and certainly I didn't see anybody with other cultural backgrounds. I told myself, maybe I'm just not the right fit. I'm probably not going to make it because nobody looked like me or sound like me that it seems like it's successful in doing this. So I talked to Marshall about this. I say, well, Marshall, what do you think? He thought about it. And then he said to me, he said, you know, the fact that you're Asian and woman and you have very unique skill set and experiences and characteristics that you can offer that nobody else can. Being different is an advantage, not a disadvantage. That completely reframed my mindset to look at the situation and say, wow, how come I didn't look at that? You know, I didn't think of that before, right? Well, that was very empowering. And I started to look into what is my niche and what do I have to offer that's unique and special that I can make a difference and add value. So that was a great lesson for me. Thank you, Marshall. The second lesson I learned was that when I find out that my kids have autism, and of course, my triplets, they were growing. It was extremely stressful and demanding. At the time, my career was taking off and I was extremely busy. I was always traveling. When I'm at home, I'm very, very busy. And when I'm on the road, so I'm really trying to balance the family and also my work. What happened was when I'm at work, I feel guilty about not being at home, taking care of the kids. When I'm at home taking care of the kids, I feel guilty about not working, not doing what I'm supposed to be doing for my work. Always constantly struggle and feel tortured by this. And so I had a discussion with Marshall. So he told me something that I actually have shared that with many, many women leaders that I work with. He said, there are many choices in life. that we have to make choices every single day, right? And when you make a choice in your life and you make peace with that. Now, given the circumstance, that make the best decision you can at the moment. And once you make that decision, make peace with that. And that's a key word there, make peace with it. Don't go back and forth and feel bad about it. So, and then you, once you make peace with it, then you continue going forward and you can always make another choice if that doesn't work out for you.
To summarize the two very important lessons that you learned from Marshall, number one, differences, turn those into opportunities, because being different and unique gives us an advantage. And the second one is, when we make a decision, instead of feeling guilty about it, make peace with it and go for it and accept it and move forward.
Yes. And if this decision doesn't work out, you can always make another choice. So again, it's about impermanence, right? You're not committed to it. Do your best. If it doesn't work out, make another choice and keep going.
There we go. Life lesson. When you have a chance to give your 20-year-old Maya an advice from the experience you have experienced in your life, what advice do you give your younger self?
Wow, that's a very profound question, Simon. First of all, I think that professionally, I would not do anything different, but I would do more of it. So for example, believe in yourself and be brave, be courageous, and step up, and don't worry too much about how other people think.
Yeah,
okay, don't care so much. And another advice I have is learn to play ping pong and learn to swim. Have more fun when I was younger. I didn't do enough of that.
It's never too late to do those
never
two things.
Never too late. That's right.
Last question. If there is a statement that you can have everybody shown on their screensaver as a daily reminder, what would that be?
The golden rule that we often talk about, right, is that treat others as you would like to be treated. But when it comes to building trust and preserve dignity, that I think I like to go with the platinum rule. Okay, so what is the platinum rule? There's only one word different. It's treat others as they would like to be treated. So that will be something that I love to always remind myself and also each other.
It goes back to empathy, understanding, pay attention, and give the other people a sense of self-worth and dignity.
Yes, absolutely.
Maya, thank you so much for your story, your insights. How do we find you online if we want to check out the book, buy the book?
Well, it's easy. First of all, you can buy the book on Amazon. The title is Saving Face, How to Preserve Dignity and Build Trust. And it's on Amazon. There's an ebook, paper copy, or audiobook. And you can also go to my website for more information. So the website is just my name, all one word, www.mayahuchan.com, mayahuchan.com.
Very good. Maya, I'm very grateful for our friendship. Thank you for being a wonderful friend. Thank you for the interview. Be well.
Thank you so much, Simon. This is a real pleasure. So good to see you. And we'll see you soon.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
I'm Simon Vetter, and you have been listening to Teaming Up. To never miss an episode, you can subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Also, please refer Teaming Up to your friends, colleagues, and coworkers. It will make me happy when more people can benefit from valuable content. Thank you for listening.